your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing on with the first hour of the weekend edition. I hope everybody enjoyed that first conversation with Brent Cook. I am now, as promised, chatting with Joe Mazumdar from Exploration Insights. Now, Joe, let's go a little bit higher up the food chain when it comes to resource companies. Brent and I talked a lot about the juniors and explorers. You and I were chatting off mic, and you said that right now you do have a general focus on these development plays because they are trading at such a discount to the metals price, and also considering all the other resource companies out there in the different sectors that they are in. And development plays are getting not very much love. And you know what? There is a reason for that, maybe in terms of funding and in terms of the slow news flow. Development plays tend to be somewhat longer-term investments because they don't have those near-term catalysts necessarily that, say, exploration plays do, or even some of the actual production plays. Take us through what you're liking or why you're liking these development plays.
Okay, thanks, Corey. Thanks for having me. Yeah, development plays historically always get a discount because in terms of the discovery curve, that's where a lot of the risk is out there, you know, because now you've switched from retail and you're trying to pick up different types of investors. This time it's more discounted because those other types of investors, there's not as many of them because institutional equity is really not there anymore to pick up the ball from retail after the company goes into development or looks to go into development. So I think right now the discount for development projects is much higher. And so it presents an opportunity if you can find the right development project. And that comes with knowing that the financing risk is mitigated by having shareholders with deep pockets, and or you have a partner, a big company that's partnered in the project that helps mitigate all the technical and execution risks that a development project could have. And so that's really a part of what I'm looking at right now and part of some of the companies I've purchased.
Now, what about scale or general size of the development too? There are a number of smaller companies trying to bring smaller mines into production, something that Brent and I did touch on quickly. But in terms of large scale projects that do cost a lot of money to get up and running, I find those to be fewer and further between. Where are you finding your sweet spot?
Well, right now, it could be a mix. I mean, if it's a large development project, let's say like Trilogy Metals Arctic deposit, which is right now they have the pre-feasibility study and they're working on the feasibility study, but they just recently signed the joint venture with South 32, a large multi-billion dollar diversified miner, ASX listed, that doesn't have a lot of copper assets. You create this, I have a big company that's going to lead the engineering, that's going to help mitigate the issues that a small company would have in dealing with, you know, all the development issues or putting in new personnel in that. You already have that with the major company. For me, a good blueprint of that would have been how Gold Road managed the development of the Gruyere joint venture with Goldfields. That was a 50-50 joint venture and basically in the middle of Western Australia. And this company went from discovery to actual building into first pour within 5 years, which is unheard of. But part of the reason they were able to do this is a well-managed joint venture with Goldfields, that Goldfields came in there. They knew how to develop big gold projects, and they focused in on that part, whereas the other company, Gold Road, focused in on what it does best, which was exploration. And so, we did well on that stock. Trilogy is a bit different in that it's been exploring, it's been developing this project. South 32 has come in, but it's similar in that, South 32 injected a lot of money into it. They're using their own people to develop the project, and Trilogy is going to sit there with a minority position in a big project that's being developed by a major. And so in the end, you know, is it an M&A target? Potentially, but otherwise, hopefully it's just, a dividend paying cash cow, if you're a really strong believer in the copper market.
So what about some of the risks that companies have when they are going through development? As I said, it's a slow news flow time. And unfortunately, when you get any sort of significant news when companies are in development, it usually tends to be negative news in terms of delays or cost overruns or really anything that doesn't seem to be lining up with some of their studies that they had on the resource or the deposit before going into development. What do you follow closely and what do you consider when you're balancing out, say, a PFS or even a full feasibility study and when the company does start development?
Well, the big thing is that when it's a small company doing a feasibility study, I guess how keen are they on actually developing it? Because in this environment, most of the time they will be forced to develop it. Just like a Lundin Gold with Fruta del Norte, it wasn't taken out before. It's gone into commercial production. I think it's almost close to commercial production, but it added all that value by doing it itself. And I find nowadays with the development companies, you really have to do it yourself. Like with Continental Gold developing Buriticá, you know, they had a really good development chief operating officer who also had a big hand in developing the Escobal silver underground silver mine in Guatemala. And he basically led the development of the Buriticá project in Colombia. So a lot of the value they added was they did it themselves prior to getting taken out by Zijin Mining. And so when you look at these development projects, you got to look at who's on the management team. Do they have the capacity to build this project? Do they have the capacity to attract funds to build this project? And what is their financing exposure? And so the idea nowadays of, you know, of these development companies putting together a scoping study that's basically a sell document right now is probably not what I would be looking for, is not what I'm looking for right now.
All right. So when we consider development companies, there aren't actually all that many out there, but you can go and find them. However, some are in some of these other jurisdictions that aren't first and foremost on a lot of investors' minds, because right now investors are very focused on really a select, almost a handful of jurisdictions. What are you seeing out there in terms of development in either safe jurisdictions or these other jurisdictions that you're okay with, you shy away from? What can you share with us?
Okay, I mean, with Trilogy, it's Alaska. They've got a few, I mean, their permits for the AMBLA road access would be their next significant catalyst, followed by a feasibility study. Even though it's Alaska and remote, these catalysts would be significant for them to open up that entire mining district. I've also just recently been to South Africa, and I see an opportunity there with Platinum Group Metals and developing a large PGM deposit, again, with a partner potentially. So their next significant catalyst would be for not only for them to permit the project, the Waterberg project, which they actually discovered about a decade ago on the northern limb of the Bushveld complex, but also to potentially bring Impala Platinum into the fold with respect to a partner to help them develop the project. Because Impala Platinum has obviously projects in South Africa, but they have this large plant on the West Limb called Rustenburg that's running out of feed. And a lot of the operations on the West Limb are not very productive or very high cost. And so a lot of the South Africans are looking for more mechanized mines. And that was part of the reason that Impala actually purchased North American Palladium, was to have more in-house expertise on mechanized mines that have higher productivity, lower labor costs, because they hire about a 10% of the amount of people that less productive mines hire. So that productivity is being applied to a lot of the North Limb projects because they're new projects. So that's a one Anglo has in the North Limb. That includes Ivanhoe's Platte Reef, and also Waterberg, which is in the northern extreme of the North Limb. So that's a different switch on mining PGMs in South Africa. And what's also nice about platinum group elements is that deposit has a higher proportion of palladium, which is what I was looking for in terms of the exposure. And so with that one, I get, you know, a definitive feasibility study. I get a catalyst coming up with respect to the permit. And also if Impala Platinum come in, then that's a significant, you know, de-risking with respect to having a major local producer develop the project.
Let's also talk about Pretium too, because Pretium has been in the news this week on, unfortunately, kind of more negative news when they are going through a leadership transition plan. They provided 2019 results as well as a production outlook. Their stock has been trending lower, but when the news broke on Wednesday, it picked up a lot of momentum to that downside. Pretium's one of those development or production companies that had a lot of question marks around the overall project and the ability of the company to mine this consistently and profitably. What are your thoughts on that news out of Pretium?
Well, I mean, it's nothing unusual with respect to what I'd always thought about the deposit. It's highly variable, the grade. You know, the initial reserves, I believe, were like 14 to 15 grams life of mine average. And now it seems like the grade's going down to like 8 grams or 9 grams. I don't know if 8 to 9 grams works at the original feasibility study price level, which might have been more like $12.50, and now their costs are creeping up. All in sustaining costs, I believe, are creeping up to over $1,000. So, really, the mine requires this current gold price to make money, which they are. They're generating free cash flow, but the variability of the grade quarter on quarter, it's hard to predict. Day to day, obviously, even worse. But that, I believe, has always been the issue of the mine geologically. That's just the way it is. You know, it's a very high, what they say, coefficient of variation. So that's the standard deviation or the variability of the grade over the average grade. And so there's a big spread there. And, you know, and that's probably one of the reasons, probably the reason that they went from a throughput of 2.7 thousand tons per day to, I believe, up to 3.5 or more, because they were worried that they just wouldn't get the ounces to pay back their debt. And that partly might be responsible for some of the grade coming down as they buy more material. So a Pretium right now, you know, I believe the CEO is gone, and also the chief geo, and now they're redoing the resource with different consultants. But I would argue that it doesn't really matter who does the resource estimate. It's going to be flawed because I don't think mathematically right now we have a method that can predict how an accurate grade for that deposit. It's almost like you need to take a big haircut on it to make something, you know, quote unquote feasible, but that big haircut, I don't know if that makes it economic. And so for that thing, for Pretium to get taken out, as some people suggest right now, given that it's a drop in value because it still generates free cash flow, is that when you run your own numbers as a big company, what kind of resource are you going to model and at what price? If you're going to model an 8 to 9 gram deposit in this remote part of Northwest British Columbia, granted with grid power, does that still work at your reserve price right now? Because most of these companies are still using reserve prices of $1,200, $1,250. Doesn't make any sense. That would be the issue.
All right, we'll wrap it up there, Joe. Interesting to take a look at just another kind of subsector in the resource companies, and one that, yeah, has been under a little bit of pressure, but that's just because the resource investors right now are very, very selective. And as I mentioned, development plays just do not usually give you that sort of news flow for near-term moves. But if it's the right project, then it can be one of those long-term great investments that provides you with cash and capital gains. Joe, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time on this weekend show. It's a pleasure chatting with both you and Brent. I hope you both have a great rest of your weekend, and we will chat again in probably another month or two. Thanks for your time, Joe.
Great. Thanks, Corey.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.